Poets Corner. I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Rexy. Today I'll be reading from the nonsense poetry of Lewis Carroll, English writer and poet who wrote Alice in Wonderland. I'll begin with The Walrus and the Carpenter. The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright. And this was odd, because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily, because she thought the sun had got no business to be there after the day was done. "It's very rude of him," she said, "to come and spoil the fun." The sea was wet as wet could be. The sands were dry as dry. You could not see a cloud, because no cloud was in the sky. No birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand. "If this were only cleared away," they said, "it would be grand." "If 7 maids with 7 mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose," the walrus said, "that they could get it clear?" "I doubt it," said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. "Oh, oysters, come and walk with us," the walrus did beseech. "A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk, along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than 4, to give a hen to each." The eldest oyster looked at him, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But 4 young oysters hurried up, all eager for the treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd because, you know, they hadn't any feet. 4 other oysters followed them, and yet another 4, and thick and fast they came at last. And more, and more, and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so, and then they rested on a rock conveniently low. And all the little oysters stood and waited in a row.
"The time has come," the walrus said, "to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, of cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings."
"But wait a bit," the oysters cried, "before we have our chat, for some of us are out of breath. And all of us are fat."
"No hurry," said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that. "A loaf of bread," the walrus said, "is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar besides are very good indeed. Now if you're ready, oysters dear, we can begin to feed."
"Not on us," the oysters cried, turning a little blue. "After such kindness, that would be a dismal thing to do."
"The night is fine," the walrus said. "Do you admire the view? It was so nice of you to come, and you are very nice."
The carpenter said nothing but, "Cut us another slice. I wish you were not quite so deaf. I've had to ask you twice."
"It seems a shame," the walrus said,
to play them such a trick after we've brought them out so far and made them trot so quick? The carpenter said nothing, but the butter spread too thick. I weep for you, the walrus said. I deeply sympathize. With sobs and tears, he sorted out those of the largest size, holding his pocket handkerchief before his streaming eyes. Oh, oysters, said the carpenter, you've had a pleasant run. Shall we be trotting home again? But answer came there none. And this was scarcely odd, because they'd eaten every one. This famous poem is called Jabberwocky, and it's about a father playing a game about an imaginary creature, the Jabberwock, and his little son has a toy sword. So he's pretending, making up a lot of words, you'll hear, that the little boy can take this little toy sword and kill the Jabberwock. "'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and jimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the maxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came. One, two, and through the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, Calloo, Callay, he chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and jimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. You are old, Father William. You are old, Father William, the young man said, and your hair has become very white. And yet you incessantly stand on your head. Do you think at your age it's right? In my youth, Father William replied to his son, I feared it might injure the brain. But now that I'm perfectly sure I have none, why, I do it again and again. You are old, said the youth, as I mentioned before. And you have grown most uncommonly fat. Yet you turned a back somersault in at the door. Pray, what is the reason for that? In my youth, said the sage, as he shook his gray locks, I kept all my limbs very supple. By the use of this ointment, 1 shilling a box, allow me to sell you a couple. You are old, said the youth, and your jaws are too weak for anything tougher than suet. Yet you finished the goose with the bones and the beak. Pray, how did you manage to do it? In my youth, said his father, I took to the law and argued each case with my wife. And the muscular strength which it gave to my jaw has lasted the rest of my life.
You are old, said the youth. One would hardly suppose that your eye was as steady as ever. Yet you balanced an eel on the end of your nose. What made you so awfully clever?
I have answered 3 questions, and that is enough, said his father. Don't give yourself airs. Do you think I can listen all day to such stuff? Be off, or I'll kick you downstairs.
The Mad Gardener's Song. Mad meaning crazy. He thought he saw an elephant that practiced on a fife. He looked again and found it was a letter from his wife.
At length I realize, he said, the bitterness of life.
He thought he saw a buffalo upon the chimney piece. He looked again and found it was his sister's husband's niece.
Unless you leave this house, he said, I'll send for the police.
He thought he saw a rattlesnake that questioned him in Greek. He looked again and found it was the middle of next week.
The one thing I regret, he said, is that it cannot speak.
He thought he saw a banker's clerk descending from the bus. He looked again and found it was a hippopotamus.
If this should stay to dine, he said, there won't be much left for us.
He thought he saw a kangaroo that worked a coffee mill. He looked again and found it was a vegetable pill.
Were I to swallow this, he said, I should be very ill.
He thought he saw a coach and four that stood beside his bed. He looked again and found it was a bear without a head.
Poor thing, he said. Poor silly thing, it's waiting to be fed.
He thought he saw an albatross that fluttered round the lamp. He looked again and found it was a penny postage stamp.
You'd best be getting home, he said. The nights are very damp.
He thought he saw a garden door that opened with a key. But he looked again and found it was a double rule of 3.
And all its mystery, he said, is clear as day to me.
He thought he saw an argument that proved he was the Pope. He looked again and found it was a bar of mottled soap.
A fact so dread, he faintly said, extinguishes all hope.
Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, from Alice in Wonderland, at the Mad Tea Party. The Mad Hatter says,
It was at the great concert given by the Queen of Hearts, and I had to sing,
Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at.
You know the song, perhaps?
I've heard something like it, said Alice.
It goes on, you know, the Hatter continued, in this way.
Up above the world you fly, like a tea tray in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at.
The Lobster Quadrille. A quadrille is a dance, and it mentions a whiting, which is a fish.
Will you walk a little faster? Said a whiting to a snail. There's a porpoise close behind us, and he's treading on my tail. See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance? They are waiting on the shingle. Will you come and join the dance? Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, will you join the dance? Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, won't you join the dance? You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea. But the snail replied, "Too far, too far," and gave a look askance. Said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, could not join the dance. "What matters is it how far we go?" his scaly friend replied. "There's another shore, you know, upon the other side. The further off from England, the nearer it is to France." "Then turn not pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance. Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, will you join the dance? Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, won't you join the dance?" Acrostic. This short poem is at the beginning of Alice in Wonderland. Little maidens, when you look on this little storybook, reading with attentive eye its enticing history, never think that hours of play are your only holiday, and that in a house of joy, lessons serve not to annoy. If in any house you find children of a gentle mind, but each pleasing ever the others, each the others vexing never, daily work and pastime daily in their order taking gaily, then be very sure that they have a life of holiday. A game of fives. Five little girls of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, rolling on the hearth rug, full of tricks and fun. 5 rosy girls in years from 10 to 6, sitting down to lessons, no more time for tricks. 5 growing girls from 15 to 11, music, drawing, languages, and food enough for 7. 5 winsome girls from 20 to 16. Each young man that calls, I say, "Now tell me what you mean." 5 dashing girls, the youngest 21. But if nobody proposes, what is there to be done? 5 showy girls, but 30 is an age when girls may be engaging, but they somehow don't engage. 5 dressy girls of 31 or more, so gracious to the shy young men they snubbed so much before. 5 passé girls, their age? Well, never mind. We jog along together like the rest of humankind. But the quondam careless bachelor begins to think he knows the answer to that ancient problem, how the money goes. The sea. There are certain things, a spider, a ghost, the income tax, gout, an umbrella for 3, that I hate. But the thing that I hate the most is a thing they call the sea. Pour some salt water over the floor. Ugly, I'm sure, you'll allow it to be. Suppose it extended a mile or more. That's very like the sea. I had a vision of nursery maids. Tens of thousands passed by me, all leading children with wooden spades, and this was by the sea. Who invented those spades of wood? Who was it cut them out of a tree? None, I think, but an idiot could, or one that loved the sea. It is pleasant and dreamy, no doubt, to float with thoughts as boundless and souls as free. But suppose you are very unwell in a boat, then how do you like the sea? There is an insect that people avoid, whence is derived the verb to flee. Where have you been by it most annoyed? In the sand by the sea. If you like coffee with sand for dregs, a decided hint of salt in your tea, and a fishy taste in the very eggs, by all means choose the sea. And if, with these dainties to drink and eat, you prefer not a vestige of grass or tree, and a chronic state of wet in your feet, then I recommend the sea. For I have friends who dwell by the coast. Pleasant friends they are to me. It is when I'm with them I wonder most that anyone likes the sea. They take me for a walk, though tired and stiff, to climb the heights, I madly agree, and after a tumble or so from the cliff, then they kindly suggest the sea. I try the rocks, and I think it cool that they laugh with such an excess of glee, as I heavily slip into every pool that skirts the cold, cold sea. The voice of the lobster. 'Tis the voice of the lobster, I heard him declare. You have baked me too brown. I must sugar my hair. As a duck with its eyelids, so he with his nose trims his belt and his buttons, and turns out his toes. When the sands are all dry, he is gay as a lark, and will talk in contemptuous tones of the shark. But when the tide rises and sharks are around, his voice has a timid and tremulous sound. I passed by his garden and marked with one eye how the owl and the panther were sharing a pie. The panther took pie crust and gravy and meat, while the owl had the dish as its share of the treat. When the pie was all finished, the owl, as a boon, was kindly permitted to pocket the spoon, while the panther received knife and fork with a growl and concluded the banquet by eating the owl. A boat beneath a sunny sky, lingering onward dreamily in an evening of July. Children three that nestled near, eager eye and willing ear, pleased a simple story to hear. Long has paled that sunny sky. Echoes fade and memories die. Autumn frosts have slain July. Still she haunts me phantomwise, Alice, moving under skies, never seen by waking eyes. children yet, the tale to hear, eager eye and willing ear, lovingly shall nestle near. In a wonderland they lie, dreaming as the days go by, dreaming as the summers die, ever drifting down the stream, lingering in the golden dream. Life, what is it but a dream? Thank you for joining me today as we explored the nonsense poetry of Lewis Carroll on Poet's Corner. I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Rexy. Goodbye till next time. Remember, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left click on On Demand Podcasts. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.